I was very excited from the start, and then everything started getting to me. And look, it got emotional in the mix of trying to sign a freehold and then finding out that we're having a baby. And the stress does mount. I feel very humbled and gracious to have the opportunity to open my dream restaurant.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Cooking over fire. It's the moment that transformed not only the way we eat, but triggered a key moment in the way we evolved too. In recent years, there's been a throng of chefs drawn to the flame of cooking over fire. And as such, it's becoming a key feature of our culinary offering. Jake Kelly is the chef and co-owner of RK in Adelaide, South Australia. Jake, how are you going?
Good, bud. How are you?
Good. You caught the firebug at a pretty young age and were drawn to the industry. Tell us about that period of time and what lured you to that idea of cooking over fire.
Yeah, for sure. I think it was when I sort of got back from England, and I was working in a sort of small restaurant in Fitzroy called The Commoner in Melbourne. And the owners, Joe and Matt, had this beautiful sort of wood-fired oven out the back. And that was sort of my, first introduction, to fire. And something that's really, grown on me for a few years now. And it's taken me to some amazing places. I think it just creates a new level of deliciousness in food, and it's something that I'm really thriving on at the moment.
The idea of the Aussie barbecue is well known to all of us in Australia, but it's often associated with burning your eyebrows and overcooking sausages. But tell us about the challenges of cooking over fire compared to cooking on a stove with gas or with induction or electric.
Yeah, look, I think, cooking over fire just creates, obviously, another complete new element. I think having, I sort of explained this to a friend, Max, the other day, cooking with fire just, you can put a log of wood on a fire and it can burn completely different. You have really no control of the heat. Once you put a couple of logs on, you get this raging fire. But I think the main purpose is you want really good coals to cook over. That's something that I learned very heavily on at Burn Ends when I was up in Singapore for a few years. Not obviously knowing too much about the controlling of heat, Dave really stood me down the path of, creating good coals is a really good thing. And if you don't have good coals, you're going to find it pretty hard to cook over. So, that was a big learning curve.
Your career has really shown you to be a bit of a globetrotter in regards to all the amazing venues that you've worked at, and we can get into that at some stage. But you grew up on the central coast of New South Wales. What was food like for you growing up?
Oof. The old man used to make some good stews at home. The old little the deviled sausage was always a go-to. But, I think sort of the passion definitely came from the old man. Mum never really touched the kitchen. If Mum ever cooked, it was meat pies in the oven. So Dad was a little bit more experimental in that case. I think that's, from an early part when I was probably about, 12 or 13, and watching Dad cook and doing the home sort of style cooking for me, my brother and my sister was something I definitely enjoyed doing. But obviously I was very sporty when I was young. So when I came home, Dad always had a plate the size of Mount Everest and I'd always eat it. So came from the old man's side and got me into cooking for sure.
You went to the UK at a very young age and worked in some restaurants. Tell us about that time and what impact it had on you.
Yeah. Look, I kind of kicked myself a little bit that I went over there so young. I think I was doing a stage at the Fat Duck when I was 19. And then moving from a kitchen like that into the library, they sort of weed through them. If you're not hard enough at the library, then you don't really last. I wasn't obviously at the library for an immense amount of time. I think I was just shy of a year, but yeah, it was just, you know, it was a very high kitchen, and I wish I sort of toughed it out a little bit more. But, you know, I think everyone knows, or every chef knows, on how hard it can be, especially a few years ago in English kitchens. But, yeah, I really thrived on the opportunity at the Duck and at the Ledbury, and I sort of made my, you know, made it good when I was there. And, you know, Brett's been a massive mentor for me, and an idol, I would say, in the way he approaches food. So, yeah, I was very, very, very honoured to be able to work in that kitchen for sure.
Those early days when you came back to Australia, what were the real pivotal moments for you, and what kitchens were you in that sort of changed and transformed you?
Yeah, I think working with Scott. Scott's, you know, is been amazing. I think since that period, we've clicked very, very well. I worked for Scott at Estelle when he reopened, when it was Estelle Bistro. So, yeah, that he's been, you know, yeah, he's been amazing. Like, I was with him the other day. Showed him through the restaurant, and he's just got that knack of being able to walk into a venue, and especially a new one or one that's about to open, and just throw all these curveballs at you to actually start thinking about it. And it's something that you probably wouldn't necessarily see. So, yeah, Scott was definitely a pivotal moment. And I think, you know, that year that I was with Scott, I was fortunate enough to win Australian Young Chef of the Year. And, you know, he really pushed me in down the path of being the chef I am today. So I thank him for that.
Well, that was 2015 that you won Young Chef of the Year with the Appetite for Excellence program. Tell us about what it was like going through that, and you know, what impact that award had on you.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think the whole program that was run at the time was, you know, it's amazing for young chefs. I think it was a really good, you know, I'd hate the word competition, but it was definitely a good, you know, camaraderie. I met a lot of good people out of that, a lot of good producers, and met people like yourself, which was great. So, yeah, that was a really good process to be a part of. And the cooking side of things, is, you know, you to win that, you've actually got to cook. So, yeah, it was a really good award to win. And after that, I was very fortunate enough, and the prize was to travel overseas. I used that as pretty much as an eating trip. I ate it in total. I think it was 21 Michelin stars.
Wow.
Restaurants that I ate, yeah, over a period of time, or combined in total. So, yeah, like to Farviken, to Noma, to Mamo. And then I stopped through in Singapore on my way, and, you know, did Andre and a few other, and Burnend. So, and that's sort of how the talk started with me and Dave, which was, you know, very exciting. So, but yeah, it was definitely a good pivotal moment in my career to win such a prestige award, and yeah, still very honoured to have that title. So yeah,
that opportunity to dine in so many amazing restaurants. Do you have any sort of real highlights that you can tell us about on that trip?
Yeah, for sure. I think there was two good highlights. When I ate at Mamo, I've been following like Espen for quite some time, and I ate there by myself. And I ate nearly everywhere by myself, actually. Then I got like a nice little handwritten letter from Espen and from Rene Redzepi when I dined at Noma as well. So, yeah, you know, I think when you're 23 years old, and, you know, you get a little handwritten letter by, you know, so chefs of that caliber, you know, sort of gives you a few goosebumps. And yeah, it was definitely a very exciting time. And then obviously heading to Farviken for a week stage as well, and spending some time with Magnus as well on the last night was also very exciting. So yeah, I was very chuffed in good hands on that trip for sure.
The ingredients and techniques of that region in the world are very different to here in many ways. What's some of the memories you have of being in that kitchen and ingredients that you worked with that surprised you?
Oh, I think the seafood is, you know, is absolutely phenomenal. You know, the cold waters of, you know, Scotland and even in Norway. It's second to none. It's absolutely stunning. And, you know, the king crab that they had at Farviken, and other seafood items that I looked at, especially at Noma, because I think when I was there, it was in their old site. And a good friend, Merrick Anderson, who's still actually currently working for Rene, sort of brought out this massive seafood platter, and, you know, king crab and razor clams and all these amazing seafood. I thought it was, you know, something that I'd never eaten before, and, you know, it was a really big highlight. And obviously the root cellar at Farviken was you know, was amazing as well. So, you know, seeing all their preserves and pickles and all that kind of stuff was, was another good highlight on how they integrate that into their menu, for sure.
Winning Young Chef of the Year in Australia isn't the only accolade that you've received. You've also won Young Chef of Southeast Asia. You placed second in the world in Milan as well. You've got a pretty full trophy cabinet. Take us to Milan with that cooking competition where they have young chefs from all over the world, and tell us about your signature dish that sort of wowed the judges so much.
It sort of started in Singapore. I didn't really sort of have an option. Pinto was very much adamant that I had to do it. And he's like, if you don't do it, you'll lose all your tips and service for the rest of the year. And I was like, well, fuck, that's not happening. So I was jumped straight onto it. So leading up into the sort of the regionals, Dave was, you know, put very pushing me. He was making me do my dish at least two or three times a week. So, because he wanted me to win and he wanted me to succeed, and which was great to have a boss that's so motivated behind you. So yeah, it was. I'll never forget it. We were doing the 12 chef 12 months, and we had James Lowe in the kitchen, and I didn't get to be a part of that dinner because the award ceremony was on that night. So the kitchen was hectic, and I went out and was fortunate enough to win, and then I. Basically, Dave got on the blower. He said, congratulations. And he goes, bring everyone back to Burnt Ends. We're having a party. So there was like, you know, myself, Tets, Richard Ekebus, Shelave. We all went back to Burnt Ends and had this massive party with James and all the guests. That turned into a late night chili crab feast down in Kyongsak. So yeah, it was, that first sort of moment winning that award was, you know, was very good. And then moving forward onto Milan, Dave kept pushing me and yeah, gave me the time that for me to actually really focus on it and give it a good crack. And, you know, Richard, who was my mentor, from Hong Kong, he's second to none. You know, he's got a world of experience and, you know, he used to do Bocuse as well back in the day. So yeah, having someone like him in my corner was a very big help. And my dish was an aged pigeon dish, which, you know, I sort of wanted to show, again, who I was as a chef and integrate that Australian flair. So I used about five different types of native Australian ingredients comprised that to a big dish. So there was an aged pigeon done in strawberry gum and native pepper berries. So it was a little compote made with rye berries. Wattle seed was involved and beetroot. I used pigeon because, you know, I love eating game. I think it's something that doesn't probably get recognised as much, especially obviously in Australia. But there was something I just love cooking as well. And I took like 20 kilos of jarrahwood from Burnt Ends and cooked it over fire in the competition, which was really great. And obviously the judges were second to none. You had Dominique Crenn, you had Paul Perret, you had Anna Ross. Brett was there. It was a very intimidating lineup to say the least. But it was an amazing experience. And, you know, hanging out with, you know, even Massimo on one night for watch some dinners, like it was, you know, 20s, I think I was 26, 27 at the time. It's a few years ago now, but it was something that'll live for me from wherever. It was such an amazing moment to be a part of. And just not that, just the judges. It was also, you know, Scott was there as well because he was the mentor for Asian Pacific. So John Riviera was the contestant, and just, you know, having Digger there as well was, you know, was a great experience. Cause, you know, I think there was like 5 minutes to go, 10 minutes to go. And then you always hear Digger saying, come on, fucking hurry up. It was just brought back a few memories. So, it was a great experience. And to come second, you know, I still pinch myself. It was an amazing moment, especially when my mum and dad were there at the time as well. So, yeah, it was something that will live for me for a long time.
That tour you did of the world to eat in all those amazing restaurants, as you mentioned, included a stopover in Singapore. But Singapore had kind of changed things for you as well as a chef, and it drew you to eventually become the head chef at Burnt Ends with Dave Pint. Tell us about the impact Singapore had on you and how it changed your cookery.
Yeah, look, it's
Singapore's amazing. I think I still say to my partner, most days I do miss it. You know, it's Burnens is this restaurant that is a machine. It, you know, the ovens are still hot when you come in the morning. It never sleeps. So to walk, you know, that place really, you know, got a good grasp on me, and I was very into it. I was very into, you know, cooking over fire, working. The staff that we had were just all slayers. They all can cook. Like my sous chef when I first got there, Deborah, like she was a year older than me, but she'd been with Dave for a few years, 2 years I think before me. Like she could cook like whole 20, like, you know, 20 kilos leg of pork in a cold oven, bang on 52. Like it was just incredible, like of what Dave was teaching these guys. And then I jumped on that straight away and sort of, you know, gained as much knowledge as I could out of, you know, the staff that were there and out of Dave. So it was, you know, it was, yeah, still amazing. I still, you know, very stoked to have worked there and be under Dave as head chef. And, you know, the stuff that, you know, the opportunities that he gave me, yeah, I'll never get that again from a boss. So yeah, it's put him in very high regard. Pinto is, he's amazing.
You eventually came back to Australia and you had a role at Mimi's at Coogee Pavilion, which sort of flied in the face of the more casualisation of dining and really went for a top shelf offering. What was it like in that big open kitchen in that sort of really opulent dining room?
Yeah, look, it was good. I think I was definitely like very confused of like where I was sort of direction I was going. I had, you know, after Burnens, I had a very good opportunity to go to New York and take over as head chef at Estella. So, you know, going over to New York for 4 days and things sort of didn't align. I came back, you know, quite disjointed. Huck. I was just a bit not sure where I wanted to go and what I wanted to do. And so after 4 days in New York, generally takes a lot of money out of your pocket as well. So I sort of, yeah, definitely need a job. And, you know, I'd cooked for Justin before up at Burnens. So I sort of reached out to Juzzy and then he put me in touch with Jordan. And, it was very, you know, good to open a restaurant, especially something of the caliber of what Mimi's is. And, yeah, it was good to be in an environment working with a, you know, a good bunch of boys again. You know, Sam Parsons, Jeffrey DeRome, like Jeff's, you know, ex-Rockpool, ex-Mike McKerney. Like, yeah, just a really all-star lineup, and Jacob Davey as well. So I was very, you know, very passionate to be involved in that company as well of good chefs. So, yeah, and obviously you saw the kitchen. Like, it's absolutely stunning. The venue is absolutely gorgeous. And, yeah, I've got a lot of good mates out of that. And I think when sort of COVID hit, and then when everything went into shutdown, that was sort of a bit of a turning point for myself. You know, just trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I didn't want to, you know, the last 3 years of Burnens just to sort of go to waste and fall into more of a, you know, a comfortable job. I wanted to keep pushing myself. And, yeah, that's sort of one of the reasons sort of I ended up in Adelaide.
Well, you've been there for a little while now. Tell us about what it's been like living in Adelaide and becoming part of that hospitality industry.
Yeah. The heartless start was, it was pretty hard. I'm not going to lie. I fell into a role probably not suited to me as much. And, you know, finished up there pretty quickly. And, I was a bit down in the dumps and it was a big move to make. And I just moved my whole life here and, got in touch with some really good people, Michael Cameron and Jack Cameron, the owners of Pirate Life Brewery. Met them down in Port Adelaide one afternoon and they were like, you know, what are you doing? And I was like, look, I don't know. I've had a pretty rough few months. I'm just going to see what happens. And during this time, I've met my beautiful partner, Anna. So I didn't really want to up and leave and head back to Sydney because Justin was definitely at me to come back and do something good. But,
I sort of bury my roots in here. The boys at Pirate Life offered me a really good opportunity to do a pop-up over summer. And I was like, yeah, cool, that sounds good. So they, you know, hired me a food truck, and then they built me probably the best grill setup I've ever worked on in my career. And they built this at the brewery for me. And then, yeah, I just did a pop-up for, you know, 4 months over summer. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, cooked everything over fire, 5 dishes, and, yeah, absolutely killed it.
Tell us about some of those dishes that you were cooking.
Oh, like, I think one night, for Pirate Life birthday, like, I cooked a whole leg of Mayura beef. I was there, like, 2:30 in the morning, served it at 1 p.m. that afternoon. That's something, that was absolutely delicious. We just kept it really simple. Like, I still wanted to stay, true to myself and cook everything over fire. And we didn't have a deep fryer. We didn't have anything like that in the truck. So we just, gave the punters what they want. So we did, like, beautiful, like, buttermilk brine lamb shoulders and did, like, a sluvaki. But everything, again, all touched over fire. We did, like, a Wagyu beef bagel. Sort of like a bit of fun, stuff that I probably would necessarily do if I was in, say, a restaurant. But I think that's what made it fun about it. And, Pippi's cooked over the coals, tossed in XO sauce. And, just sort of fun stuff that would also go well with the beer. It was a good opportunity. And then did a few good events in that meantime as well. So it was definitely... Yeah, a very fun period. And I had my sous chef, Zach, with me at the time. So it's sort of all, linked up. And then I got to meet my business partner, Marty, at that time as well.
Did coming back to Australia after a period working overseas with such different ingredients, did it reinvigorate your love for Australian produce and producers?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I think I was very a few weeks ago, I actually got the thought to sit down with Lennox over Tasting Australia. And he just really, he said a few things, a couple of sentences about produce and on how lucky we are in South Australia to have such unique growers and beautiful ingredients. And it sort of clicked for me. And like, it's been so nice to have that again. And especially being in Singapore, everything's flown in, nothing's grown there. There's no cattle. You can't just go and say, oh, I'm going to go get some beef today. Everything's imported and it takes, 5 to 7 days to come. So, it might be winter in Australia and, summer in bloody, in England or something. And you're getting completely different opposite produce. So, to come back to Australia and have a season again, it's very exciting. It's, to work to seasons again, it's really good. And the producers down here are really good. Like Naringa, I've got a beautiful, biodynamic organic farm up at Mount Barker, which I go to quite regularly. Beautiful beef, Mayura, Nomad Farms, like seafood, lobsters from Port Lincoln. We were getting lobsters at Pirate Life. I was doing a lobster special and we were giving him for $38 a kilo because the export market was gone. So, having that during that period as well, still having everything in your state that's not, getting exported was actually really, really good because, they had to obviously move the products. So, I really jumped on that when I could and I was cooking a whole lot of lobsters over the grills of Pirate Life. So it wasn't bad at all. So it's definitely, very much grown on me, since I've been back, especially in South Australia. How good this state is for produce. So it's great.
Well, you're now working with the Palmer Hospitality Group that have 2KW, Paloma, Fish Bank. Tell us about the discussions early on with them and the creation of RK.
Yeah. So I met Marty and a guy named Ed Peters. They came down to the brewery one day and an MC comes up to me and was like, oh, you need to meet this guy. And I was like, oh, yeah, just plugging away doing my thing. And he's like, his name's Marty Palmer. He's got a few restaurants in the city. And I've sort of vaguely heard of him before. And I was like, oh, okay, I met Marty. He was like, oh, we should catch up and have a bit of a chat. And his other business partner, Ed Peters, I used to cook for at Burn Ends quite a lot because he owns a company called Straight Wine. and we used to operate out of Duxton Hill. It was just up around the corner from Burnt Ants. And so Ed used to come quite a lot. Anyway, I cooked him the whole menu from the truck, and Marty came over and goes, "We need to chat." And then Ed sort of told him that you need to hire this guy. Anyway, cut long story short, 2 weeks went by and I didn't hear anything from him. And I was like, "Oh, you know, I won't worry about it. I'll just do the truck and we'll see what happens after that." And then Marty slung me a text out of nowhere and was like, "Oh, do you want to come have a look at a site with me?" And I was like, "Yeah, all right." Anyway, I had a chat with my partner and she was like, "Yeah, well, let's just go see what he has to say and we'll go from there." And then I met him at 127 The Parade in Norwood. Marty, he loves the site. It's a very stunning building. It's all heritage listed from the outside. So it has this beautiful facade at the front. And I walked in, I was like, bloody hell, it's big. It's a big site. And then I sort of fell in love with it from the start. As soon as I walked in, once I saw pass on the size, I looked at, you know, the structure of what the place had. The bones of the building were amazing. And the natural light in the venue is incredible. And the little courtyard we have out the back, I started to see, you know, my vision. I started to see a restaurant, and that's when I was like, okay, let's do this properly. And then we went and had a beer, and I sort of told him my vision and, you know, what I wanted to be. And I think the biggest part is that I wanted to be an owner of a restaurant. And then Marty's eyes sort of lit up, and then we got talking, and yeah, and then that we started the conversations in probably October last year. And yeah, we, you know, obviously I announced the restaurant yesterday, so it's taken some time, and very fortunate that we brought the property, so we brought the freehold of this amazing site. So yeah, big investment that me and my partner have done, but very happy with the outcome. And so it's going to be very exciting. We're in for a good ride.
Well, what's it been like creating your very first restaurant?
Oh, man, it's pretty, I was very excited from the start, and then it daunted, like everything started getting to me, and look, it got emotional. It's a big, you know, for most people, we're expecting our first baby this year, later in the year, which is very exciting as well. So me and my partner having a baby boy. So yeah, you know, in the mix of trying to sign a freehold and then finding out that we're having a baby, and it's, yeah, the stress does mount. But yeah, look, I think that was where Marty sort of, you know, came into hand, and, you know, he's been absolutely amazing. Marty's sort of kept us calm and really taking us through the process of, you know, how to open a restaurant and what it takes, especially from a business side of things. Marty's obviously got a few places in Adelaide that are, you know, very well respected. He's very much a businessman. And that's sort of the side that I wanted to learn about. And grow, and he's been there the whole way. So when we did ever get into pickles, or, you know, talking about our agreements and the JV and all this kind of stuff, he's always put it back into perspective and kept us really calm and motivated. So but yeah, look, I feel very humbled and you know, gracious to have the opportunity to open my dream restaurant.
Well, tell us a bit about your vision for RK and the sort of food people can expect from the kitchen.
Look, RK is, it's going to be a really amazing site and venue. So everything will be cooked over fire. So yeah, there's no gas, there is no electricity, for the cooking line. So we're pure going straight fire, which is exciting. We've got a guy named Sam. He's called the Brick Chef. He will be designing sort of about a 3.5 ton wood oven for us. So sort of similar to the ovens that I used to work out with in Burnt Ends, and also very similar to the ones at Echebarri in Spain. So it's a dual cab oven. So it's a furnace on one side, which will reach up to about 800 to 900 degrees per night, which will be a furnace to produce our coals for our grills. And then we have a big open hearth as well. So, yeah, it's very exciting to be able to slot back into something that I feel comfortable with, especially in a restaurant setting, and just cook the way I used to be able to cook at Burnt Ends, and to have that freedom as well, and to really push the boundaries. So, but yeah, look, we also still want to stay humble to that approach of being a neighbourly restaurant. We are in Norwood on the parade. So, you know, everyone was known for Stone's Throw and Grace Establishment for that. So I still want customers to come by and still have a cocktail and a snack in the front bar, and still remind customers of that we are that neighbourly restaurant. I think that's the most important thing. But if people sort of want to, I don't know, experiment a little bit more or let their taste buds flow, you know, they can come into the dining room and we'll give them what they want. So I think the main goal is to always have delicious, tasty food and look after our guests.
With that greater connection that you've developed since you've been in South Australia with producers and growers and fishers and farmers, give us a sense of the sort of dishes that might be on the menu. Have you already given some thought to that or spent some time in the kitchen to develop some recipes for the
menu? Yeah, for sure. Me and Zach sat down a few weeks ago, and we're probably nearly 75% on a full menu, which is really good. We are very fortunate we're putting in like a built-in bandsaw in the kitchen, so we can, you know, cut nice good steaks or pork or, you know, whole racks so people can enjoy a larger cut. But we also still have the opportunity for people to do want a smaller steak. I'm a big fan of cooking secondaries as well. So on glab, you know, cuts like that. So, but still obviously still, you know, having very influence on seafood and vegetables. A dish I did before with Yarra Valley brook trout roe, the crumpet will be there. I've got to do these ocean jacket cheeks on toast, which are delicious. Whole fishes will be important. We'll be bringing in some whole turbots from New Zealand. We're still obviously going to be using quite a lot of local produce, but also bring stuff in from out of state because that's just something that I do love cooking with. Whole big fish from Lakes Entrance or from Victoria or on the West Coast as well. So, yeah, I think menu's still developing, but we've also taken a bit of inspiration from a restaurant in Copenhagen called Cadeau. I ate there a few years ago, and they had this massive – I remember walking to the dining room, I looked at this wall of, like, pickles and ferments and all the garums and everything across the wall. So we do have, like, an iconic table in the restaurant, the chef's table, which will be going in, and the back of the wall will be all – preserves and pickles and ferments all in this back wall that people can look at. So, and still having that connection to the kitchen as well, and in such a unique, you know, unique building. So, but yeah, very keen to get stuck into it.
Well, I know you're working on it at the moment. When is the expected opening of RK?
Expecting opening, it's looking like probably late September or early October. So, it's still, we've got probably about a 4-month build, and demo should start next week. So I think once we get that going, we can move pretty quickly. So I'm very stoked for a design company called Studiogram to be on board. They've designed, you know, some really beautiful restaurants in Adelaide. Most recent one is Fregazzi with the Simon Kadachi Group, Chabot Show, you know, there's good restaurants in Adelaide that have been designed by them. And that was something Marty was, you know, whether we pushed on Marty to use Studiogram because they're such a unique architect firm. And what they've designed is, it's going to be really amazing. So really looking forward to it.
Well, I'm sure a lot of people in Adelaide and Australia are looking forward to it as well, Jake. We've loved having you on Deep in the Weeds today to hear your story. Please keep in touch and
will do, mate. We'll
catch up with you soon.
Awesome. Thanks, Huck. Appreciate it.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Stay tuned as we share the stories of Australia's hospo community, suppliers and producers in search of hope during this pandemic. Special thanks to executive producer Rob Locke for making this all happen. follow us on Instagram at Deep in the Weeds Podcast, or email us at podcast@deepintheweeds.com.au. Stay safe and be well.